This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you for joining IDN Guidelines Working Group call on 8th of June 2017. We have Edmund, Mats, Dennis, Satish, and Sarmad on the call. So over to you, Mats and Edmund.
Thank you. I think we first shall raise the discussion we've had with Patrick Felstrom. Don't you, Edmund, as well?
Yeah, sure. That was there were a few action items that we said we would follow up with, and one of which is to reach out to Patrick for, and SAC on the issue of out-of-zone NS records that may be containing non-compliant IDN strings, and that we have started the engagement. I guess Patrick is now aware of the understand the kind of issue we have. As I follow up just before the meeting, we'd still like to seek from him, or you know, him as wearing SX hat, whether this group should come up with anything on the matter, or point directly to them, or you know, I guess now that he understands the issue, next step is what you know they think we should do, and to what extent. We have also reached out to IAB to seek clarification on a couple of the questions that they posed to us from last time. I don't see Suzanne responding yet, but I just sent that, I think, yesterday, so I guess we'll follow up we'll follow through with that and bring the notes back to the group when we hear back from them.
So, Edmund, you think we should wait to see if Patrick comes with something more about
the. Yeah, I think we should keep going through the comments, and when we go through the entire document and come back to the few items that were parked, let's see how much further down the road we have Patrick and Suzanne, and then the group can further consider those few points.
Yes. Okay. We were somewhere in the start of the Government of India comments last time when we got off. So I don't remember how far we came. Edmund, how far did we go?
We were
Please help me, but we
were done with GOI 2, and we were probably going to go on to GOI 3.
Right. So GOI 3, okay, so it's obvious that Government of India likes to see more regulation around confusables than I think that we think it is reasonable. If you look at the technical report 39, I think we should go with that. I don't know how much they what details they go. What should we say about that? I think that the design it discusses the problems of confused balls. It doesn't say that you must have some mechanism of avoiding. So. Any suggestion how we should reply to this UI 3? An extreme view would be to Edmund, please.
Edmund here. I think we talked about this issue when we were considering the further up OX2. I don't recall exactly what we said. I think there were some issues, and we don't think that it should be a requirement. We could use it as a reference, but not kind of as a requirement. And I think Cal was especially concerned about it. Cal, probably Dennis too, but I don't recall. I wonder if Dennis or Samad or others can recall better, and we should probably go back to that. Whatever we've discussed for OX2.
Right. What we could conclude is that the government of India also referred to non-IDN confused balls. And in a way, that's totally out of scope. The question is if we should give some more, have some comments around the confusables more than we have. That's probably my question. I mean, if they want some regulation, I think. Maybe we should refer to CR39 and suggest that it should be considered or not.
Thank you. So I'm just going through the previous discussion which we recorded on items from Open Exchange, comments 1 through 3. And just want to bring those in the discussion again, since these comments, this one and the next comment, are very similar to the comments which were submitted by Open Exchange as well. I think one of the main points which was discussed before was that even though technical report 39 gives an algorithm, the algorithm obviously needs to run on some data, and the challenge actually is that there is no authoritative data source on which these can be determined, and this was the context of our discussion before as well, before when we were drafting these basic recommendations. And we had looked at the two files, confusables.txt and intentional.txt, and confusables.txt was too broad, and intentional.txt was perhaps too narrow. So we were not able to get data on which this needs to be applied, which means that if it becomes a required recommendation, then it's not clear how registries are actually going to implement them, because they will then have their own data, because there is no authoritative data, and that really becomes difficult eventually to implement. So that was one point. The second point was that some of the examples which have been given, and also generally, I guess, the data which is contained within, for example, some of the files which Unicode has released, intentional and confusables, the data includes ASCII confusability as well. So this goes beyond IDN confusability, and that is also something which obviously then goes beyond the scope of this current work. So those were a couple of discussions which were done, and I guess let me just stop here, and I guess we can continue the discussion here. So before, we were not able to conclude that discussion, we said we'll come back to it. So I guess this is a good time.
So I think that our conclusion has been that the requirements, are too, from the government of India, are too restrictive from our point of view, and they don't think it could be applied as they want it. And further down in Government of India 4, about the same thing. They want to change may to must, which emphasizes the requirement of increased control. So, Martin, you want to say something, or you're just keeping your hand up? And then the Government of India 5, Emojis, they are not permitted in the main names, are they? They're not invalid, are they? Does anyone know?
No, they are not P-valid.
So this is totally out of scope. So our reply to Government of India is that since there is no authority data that goes so far as they suggest, we don't think that the guidelines that far either. Edmund, please.
Yeah, since you kind of took on GOI 3, 4, and 5 together, I'll give my comments for all three. I think 5 is the easiest. As you mentioned, I think it's definitely we should thank them for the comment, and we agree that a separate thing, it should protect from these guidelines, because it's out of scope, and leave it at that. For, I guess, 3 and 4, we can probably kind of look at it together. From Samad's summary and recalling some of the discussion, I think our general position seems to be consistently to say that, you know, we think it's a great reference point, but it's not at a form that we could we should require registries to just follow that, or you know, must follow that. And I think that seems to be we were sticking to that point. And I think Dennis's point in the chat also is part of that. However, I'd like for us to, besides the pure ASCII examples, I wonder if anyone can come up with actual examples that TR-39 fails or actually does a worse job than some of the things what the LGRs or other policies might do. Because I think this seems to be a recurring ask, so perhaps we should give a more concrete example of how it falls apart to illustrate that this is not appropriate as a strict requirement. But I wonder if anyone has anything in mind. What I'm talking about is IDN specific examples where it falls apart and it's unimplementable to illustrate our point.
I don't get it. I don't understand what you mean by unimplementable.
Because I do recall probably Cal mentioning that there are parts of TR-39 that is is simply unimplementable. I can understand the ASCII part certainly is not implementable as an IDN policy, and let alone putting it in any LGRs. But I am not sure how to give a good example if we say TR-39. Oh, IDN specific stuff. Then I'm not sure how to give an example that also fails. Even if we take out the ASCII part of it. Samad, again, I understand the limitations on it, but the question is whether this as a starting point is at all good, and this seems to be a recurring question. I guess my question is whether we need to respond to it at all and say, hey, this is why this is unimplementable. But by saying that it misses certain things, it doesn't say it's unimplementable. It's just that this is just a baseline, and there's more things that you need to do on top of it. I'm just trying to see if we can come up with more concrete examples of why we can't put this as a baseline, taking out the ASCII only part.
This is Mark speaking. Isn't it a matter of standpoint? I mean, if you think that domain names should be as non-computable as it is possible, or if you accept that some characters are more similar than others, and therefore it is not feasible to put such a rigid requirement. Does Technical 39 really have something which is unimplementable? 39 just discusses the problem, doesn't it? Very much. Yes,
right, and then give a few examples.
Yeah. Edmund, can you give an example?
I was saying that, yes, you're right. I mean, 39 just describes the problem and then gives a few examples, kind of, and that's really the extent of it. I guess we could argue that, just by describing it, that therefore it's not something that is at a... we need to find better words, but it's just not implementable because it's not designed for it to be used specifically here. But I'm just trying to think about how better to answer the question, rather than just to say that we stick to our guns. But I think perhaps it is really just reiterating that domain names, the nature of domain names are like that. We've tolerated that thing for ASCII, and it's the right compromise. We should, you know, we should continue that same spirit as we did with the ASCII domains, something like that. But I'm kind of hoping that we could do more, but maybe we can. I'm kind of asking the question if there are certain examples that we can better make, but if there is none, then there is none.
Okay. Samad?
Right. So I think first what I'd like to say is that if we make it a must and we say that you have to be confusable, intentional.txt, following the UTR 39, then it potentially gives a false sense of security where people may tend to believe that if they implement intentional.txt, they have solved the problem, where they haven't really, because of the data which is missing. And that is the reason it may actually adversely impact the implementation, where the guidelines say that you must do this, and they eventually, somebody ends up doing it, and they still eventually get security issues, and that's probably not a good place to have. It's better than to say that, you know, may rather than must. So I guess that's one way of arguing it. And the second thing I would want to add is that there is now a good deal of data which is being produced through the label generation rule root zone project. And eventually when that project is done with all the remaining scripts in place, which may take, you know, maybe a year or slightly more, then it would be a good time to perhaps come back and very concretely say that there is a data here which does cross-script analysis by the community, and that's a stable data, and therefore it should be used as a must when that comprehensive picture is available. So this may actually be done in two steps, where we do say a may until authoritative data is available, and once that is available, maybe in the next revision, we can say that it should be a must because now we have referenceable data. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Edmund, now I understand what you mean by implementable. I mean, you mean that you cannot mechanically implement ER39. It needs some interpretation first. And I agree with that. And somehow, I think you're suggesting it's good. I mean, we replied to them that to get both false positive and false negative, so to say, if you use confusables as it is. Okay, I think that we agree on what we should say about active government leaders. Can we continue then with the YSG registry?
Before we move on, I'd like to come in quickly.
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I want to comment on GOI-5 specifically. Though we all agree that it's out of scope because it's not p-valid, I also wanted to note that SAC has recently issued a complete advisory on emojis, and they've brought up other reasons in addition to, you know, not being p-valid. for which emojis cannot be used. They also found a need to come up with that advisory because of the, I guess, the pressure coming from the community. And I think this comment is also perhaps in the same context. So even though they're not be valid, I wanted to ask, do we still want to perhaps just instead of saying it in the comments, in response to these comments, do we want to enhance our particular recommendation, which is, I think, recommendation number one, which talks about everything needing to conform to IDNA 2008, and maybe point this out as an explicit example, and point to ESSAC advisory, saying that, to say that, the details why emojis are not a good idea, ESSAC advisory explains to it, or maybe even include that as a footnote if you think it's not really a good idea. But calling out emojis explicitly as an example of something out of IDNA 2008 is a possibility we can, we can do as far as the first recommendation is concerned. And that will also address GUI 5. Thank you.
Okay, Edmund first and then me.
Okay, thank you. So I think, of course, in the comments, we should respond to government in India and also reference the ESSAC advisory. In the actual document, I'm not so sure we should single out emoji at this particular point. At least my first reaction is just to, it's not even within the scope because it's really we're talking about IDNA 2008, one of the biggest push for this particular document is to stick to that as a framework, and it just clearly is not part of it. I don't think there is much that we could say about it. Even if we just point to ESSAC document, I'm not sure it's even an IDN. I mean, to me, it's at least up to this point, it's not quite an IDN in my mind. So I think I would suggest we stay away completely from it. And I know some of you are suggesting we mention it. I'm saying I'm siding towards not mentioning it at all in the final document.
Right. This is Mark. And yeah, I agree with you, Edmund. I'm not against mentioning images in the document. I'm not for it either. I mean, we could. Why are you singling out those? Is that because ESSAC has as an advisory on it? Well, that may be. I haven't read it. I can see it's there. It's not compliant with 2008. And it's strange to see it about. If the group thinks so, I could accept it. Dennis does not think we should. What about Satish? Do you think we should include anything about emojis? Okay, so Ahmad, I'm sorry, I think we just get out.
Yeah, no problem. I just wanted to point that out as a possibility, and we keep it out.
Right. Okay. Okay, now we move on to RISG, which is Registry Support Group. Registry Support Group? What is the spell-out of that?
Stakeholder Group.
Okay, Registry Stakeholder Group. So, in the first comment we have is the use that of the reference to RC 2119. I think it's a pity that 2119 is so implementation oriented that have used it for anything else. But we have already decided that we move away from reference to 2119. I don't think there's more to say about it. Okay. In comment number two, they suggest that we refer to those RCs and their successors. Yeah. Well, but I guess there are pros and cons. Pro is that the document could make additional RCs changing something. I guess, is that it doesn't give a push to update the guidelines. It changes. But I guess that the pro is heavier. Does anyone disagree? Edmund, please.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that pro, you mean that we accept the OASG comment and add it, right? That's I think it makes sense. So I know, and I think we should accept that suggestion.
Yeah, that the pro of adding it, yes, accept their suggestion, yes. I think it makes sense. There are more pros than cons of doing that. Okay. I think this is okay, and I guess that Dennis is to also sum up. So let's move to number three. Revised guide number four to add both. For emphasis, okay, the table containing hyphens. That's a good suggestion, I think. Report, right? Their comment number five, guideline five is overly prescriptive because registry operators are in better position to design a communication plan to address any policy update that affects the live cycle of domain names. Okay. Calls work. A lot of details. What should we say? we make it less prescriptive, Sarmad.
Thank you, Mads. I also wanted to point out at this time, and this we had, I pointed out earlier as well, and we had said that we'll come back to this discussion when we are reviewing the guidelines, so I guess this is a good time. In recommendation number two, the second half of it, we are saying things which are similar to recommendation number five. So there is already some redundancy in our document where we are talking about probably the same thing in two different recommendations. I just wanted to point that out in this context as well. So when we are re-looking at five, we may also re-look at the second half of recommendation number two and make sure that we take out any redundancies there. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Edmund. Oh, you took your hand down.
Sorry, I put my hand down and then I was supposed to unmute, but I forgot to unmute and I was speaking to myself, I guess. So my, I guess the, I'm just reading out the guidelines. It's probably wordy, and we can probably make it less prescriptive. I think, some of the items perhaps can be collapsed, but I think in general it's not so bad. I mean, to indicate that, you know, whether they are going to support or not, conforming, you know, how are they actually going to do it, and be explicit about it. I think is probably good advice. I don't think it's actually to design a communication plan. We're not really devising a communication plan for them, but rather just the, you know, what are some of the requirements that those communication plans should probably include. And to Samad's point, yeah, probably when we go back to wordsmithing the whole document, to look at two and five together and make sure that we don't, you know, I mean, we don't really need to say the same thing twice. But I think generally I don't think we need to completely take it away, and I think, you know, guideline five has some meat to it that we should keep. But I think we should be able to simplify it to some extent.
This is Mark speaking. Yes, when it comes to item number two, then probably just remove the last sentence there, and number five, include that it also refers to the transition of IBM 2003 to 2008. Maybe we should try to break five up for the pieces. Quite long recommendation. The only thing that which is very prescriptive, I think, is that we talk about the website. Otherwise, I think the recommendation is quite general in its way of providing things. So, I don't really agree with their comment there. And if we look at their comment number six, they think that the guide, that the recommendation 5 should not apply to pre-existing domains. I don't know what they mean. In TMDs or they mean that names that stop using their policy, maybe the latter. Well, this is about the how to migrate. So I does affect the existing domain names. Salman, please.
Yes, sir. I also wanted to add that when we were writing recommendation number 5, it was written more generally for those domain names which are no longer, I guess, conformant, but it was not written specifically in the context of transition only, because the non-conformance can occur because of other reasons as well, for example, defining variants and so on. So that's the context in which we started writing it. Eventually, we moved it in the transition discussion, but I guess what I wanted to say was that recommendation was originally written to generally cater to all the cases of non-conformance, not only those which are triggered by transition from IDNA 2003 to 2008 related issues. Thank you.
Hello?
We can hear you, Edmund.
Hello? I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. I had my mic off. Edmund, please speak.
Okay. So back to your point about ROISC 5, I think there are some parts, like actually B1, 2, 3, and B, C, and C, probably there. We could make it less descriptive, but I think we agree generally that there's something that we should keep. On ROISC 6, I think I share a similar question with Matthew, or I'm not sure. I think these guidelines apply to the TLD. So I'm not sure what pre-existing domain names really mean in this context, whether it's TLDs or the pre-existing domain names registered in second level. If it's registered in second level, we've already taken into consideration the transition aspect, and we have taken into account that you know, it's going to take time, and I don't think we even have a date where they must comply by then. So I think it's light-handed that way already. But I think if we respond to our OSG, we probably should note that personally, I think the guidelines is supposed to cover pre-existing domain names as well. I don't see them, you know, I don't see like this guideline versus this version of guideline only, you know, comes into effect for, let's say, .asia domain names registered from, let's say we finish our work in September, .asia IDNs registered prior to September 2017 is, you know, different rules, and, you know, after, I don't see it that way. So I think we probably should clarify in our response that you know, these guidelines are, I hate to use the word retroactive, but in this case it's kind of like that. Not to say that it's retroactive in the real retroactive sense, but it applies to all the second level domain names registered, and we have taken the care of considering, you know, transitions where necessary.
Dennis, please.
So to Edmund's point, so question that comes up is, so domain names are no longer valid per the new guidelines. Will registry operators be obligated to delete those names in a transition period, or just suggest registrants that those names may no longer work, so you, registrant, have to take the steps to get compliance, get a new domain name, or something else?
As I read it in the recommendation 5, what we require is that the register operator make clear how they're gonna, what actions they will take on such domain names. So it says make clear in the registration policy whether registered domain names or currently active in databases which do not conform to the guidance will continue to be published in the TDSL file. So this, what we require is that the TLD, how they inform and what actions they will take towards the registrar. Recommendation 5 does not actually say something that about what the TLD is or the register operator is obliged to do with such domain names. And domain names not being compliant with the guidelines. Maybe we should have such a text, but that's actually a separate recommendation. It's not recommendation 5. And answer to Sarmag, what I meant was that when it comes to 2003 to 2008 is that it could be worked in and that there could be different reasons why the domain names are no longer comply to the guidelines. So should we have a separate recommendation saying what the register operator should do if there are domain names not compliant with the guidelines? What do you think? Dennis.
Thank you, but I think Sarma has had his hand first.
Okay. Well, Matt first.
Thank you, Matt. So I think we've had this particular discussion during the time when we were actually writing that recommendation. At that time, the sentiment was that we don't want to give a timeline for registries to stop supporting such labels, but we would want to require them, I guess, to make their policy explicit on how they would want to continue to support those registrations which are non-compliant with IDNA 2008, for example. So recommendation 5 was, I guess, carefully crafted to address that kind of discussion. So I guess I just wanted to say that we've had that discussion on whether there should be, for example, a sunset period, and we agreed that we would keep that choice with the registries as long as they make their decisions explicit. Thank you.
Now, Dennis.
Thank you. I just want to agree with Tharman. That was my point, that guideline number 5 tries to explain that to the registry operator, and they can come up with their own plan to what are going to happen with the pre-existing names.
But then, since this question comes up from Rysik, maybe we should have a text or recommendation in the form of a recommendation saying that these guidelines do not require that existing domain names that are non-compliant must be removed. That makes it clear, I think. And then we have number 5, which tells them what information you must give, or the information that the register operator must give to its register. Edmund thinks it's a good suggestion. What do you think, Samad?
I'm okay with whatever the working group decides, of course. I think generally we are not really saying anything new. We are really specifying or clarifying what we are already implying. So it doesn't really change anything from where we are.
Edmund, please.
Yeah, so I think it's probably a good idea since we were asked, we received the question, let's be explicit so that it the registries can rest assured that it's okay. What we're saying is that it's not okay to do nothing at all in terms of telling people that, you know, what you're trying to do. I mean, it's okay to keep them running, but just be clear that that's the policy that you're taking for the registrants and users in general. But I think it's a fair requirement, so to speak.
I've seen that it does happen that TLDs register non-compliant names. Actually, my son succeeded in registering some emoji docs, some new GTLD, I don't remember which one. And I guess they could discover it later on that they just removed it. Without any information. So I think it's important that we have some requirements on how they should behave. So, I mean, editing non-compliant domain names could be by mistake, too. Okay. So we are actually top of the hour. So let's continue with rising 7 and 8 and 9 and 10, 11, a lot of them. So we have more to discuss when it comes to rising. Let's continue next week, but I'll give some other chance to say something.
Thank you, Matt. So I just wanted to ask you, we've now making some decisions regarding the recommendations, in some cases changing some recommendations, but we're not really going back to the document and making those changes. So we sort of have a set of action items which are really not assigned to anybody in a way, but are sort of hanging there, because I didn't, when we discuss these changes, we don't really assign these changes to anybody. So I wanted to ask you, I guess the working group, how you would want to address that. Do we, you know, one obviously possibility is that we assign those changes to somebody so that somebody can start the redrafting. Other option, of course, is that I can go and try to do some redrafting where it's obvious, you know, breaking the recommendations in two parts and things like that, and keep sharing an updated document for you all to review it. And but I guess I wanted to raise that we are now accumulating all these action items, but we're not really acting on them, and we don't really know who's going to be acting on them. So maybe if that can be clarified further, I think we can. That will probably be useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Samad. It's a good point. Edmund, please.
Yeah, I kind of envisioned, and thank you, Samad, for bringing it up, and I think we should get the work started, as you suggested. I would have envisioned that we, you know, after going through all the comments, we would have all the action items and stick it back into the relevant sections, so that when we go through the main document again, probably paragraph by paragraph, we would know that these are notes that we need to change, and then consider it then, and then make those action items for people to help redraft. But I think some of the, as you said, some of the obvious ones, probably you just jump in and make those changes as we go along, but then put the action items or the conclusions from our discussion as either comments or some, just stick it into the main document, so that when we go back, we have all those action items relevant to a particular section as we consider that section.
Okay. Yes, my mission was too that we should get through the comments. So next week we should really do that. Get through the rest of the comments, and then start working on it. Does that work for the group?
Right. So thank you. So what I'm taking as an action item is then I'll take all the decisions and add them as comments to the relevant sections, so that when we come back to the document, we know exactly where we're proposing changes, and then we'll do a second pass on the document and address them. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, Samad. That's what we need. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
And thank you very much, Amar.
Thank you. Bye-bye.